Ankh-Morpork was built on Ankh-Morpork. Everyone knew that. They had been building with stone here 10,000 years ago. As the annual flooding of the Ankh brought more silt, so the city had risen on its walls until attics became cellars. Even at basement level today, it was always said a man with a pickaxe and a good sense of direction could cross the city by knocking his way through underground walls, provided he could also breathe mud. What had this place been? A palace? A temple of a god who'd subsequently slipped everyone's memory? It was a big space, dark as soot, but there was a glow that managed to show up the beautiful vaultings in the roof above. A strange glow.
"Worms," said Ardent, "from the deep caves in the mountains around Lemenos. We brought them with us, and they breed very fast here. They find your silt quite nourishing. I am sure they shine more, too."
The glow moved. It did not illuminate much, but it showed up the shape of things, and it was heading towards the elevator, flowing over the wonderful ceiling.
"They head for heat and movement even now," said the hooded dwarf.
Why? Ardent gave a little laugh.
"In case you die, Commander. They think you are some rat or small deer that has tumbled into their cave. Nourishment is rare in the deeps. Every breath you exhale is food. And when eventually you expire, they will descend. They are very patient. They will leave nothing but bones."
"I was not intending to expire here," said Vimes.
"Of course not. Follow me, please," said Ardent, leading them past a big round door.
There were more on the other side of the room, and several gaping tunnel mouths.
"How far down are we?" "Not far. About 40 feet. We are good at digging."
"In this city," said Vimes. "Why aren't we trying to breathe underwater? And calling it water is giving it the best of it."
"We are very good at keeping water out, too. Alas, it appears we are less good at keeping out Samuel Vimes."
The dwarf stepped into a smaller room, its ceiling thick with brilliant worms, and motioned to a couple of dwarf-sized chairs.
"Do sit down. Can I offer you a refreshment?"
No, thank you," said Vimes. He sat down gingerly on a chair that brought his knees up almost to his chin. Ardent sat down behind a small desk made of stone slabs, and to Vimes' amazement, took off his headgear. He looked quite young, with a beard that was actually trimmed.
"How far do all these tunnels run?" Vimes said. "I don't propose to tell you," said Ardent, levelly.
"So you're undermining my city?"
"Oh, Commander, you've been to the caves in Uberwald. You've seen how dwarfs can build. We are craftsmen. Do not think that your house is about to collapse."
"But you're not just building basements, you're mining," said Vimes.
"In a sense, we would say we are mining for holes. Space, Commander. That is what we are digging for." "Yes, we are mining for holes. Although our bores have found deep treacle, you will be interested to hear."
"You can't do this."
"Can we not? But we are doing it nevertheless," said Ardent calmly.
"You are burrowing under other people's property."
"Rabbits burrow, Commander. We dig. And yes, we are. How far down does ownership go, after all, and how far up?"
Vimes looked at the dwarf. "Calm down," he thought. "You can't deal with this. This is too big." "It's something for Veterinari to decide. Stick to what you know. Stick to what you can deal with." "I'm investigating reports of a death," he said.
"Yes, Greg Hamcrusher. A terrible misfortune," said Ardent, with a calmness that was enraging.
"I've heard it was a vicious murder."
"That would be a fair description."
"You admit it," said Vimes.
"I'll choose to assume that you mean by that, do I admit there has been a murder, Commander?" "Yes, there has, and we are dealing with it."
"How?"
"We are discussing the appointment of a Zagkrdga," said Ardent, folding his hands. "That is, one who smelts, one who finds the pure ore of truth in the dross of confusion."
"Discussing? Have you sealed off the scene of the crime yet?"
"The smelter may order that, Commander, but we already know that the crime was committed by a troll."
Ardent's face now bore an expression of amused contempt that Vimes longed to remove. "How do you know this? Was it witnessed?"
"Not as such, but a troll's club was found beside the body," said the dwarf.
"And that's all you have to go on?" Vimes stood up. "I've had enough of this. Sergeant Angua."
"Sir,"
said Angua beside him. "Let's go. We're going to find the murder scene while there's any clues left to find."
"'You have no business in the lower areas,' snapped Ardent, standing up. "'How are you going to stop me? How are you going to get past locked doors? How are you going to find out who murdered Ham Crusher? I told you, a troll club was found. And that's it. We found a club so a troll did it. Is anyone going to believe that? You're prepared to start a war in my city with a piece of flim-flam like that. Because, believe me, that's what's going to happen when this gets out. Try it, and I'll arrest you.
And start a war in your city, said Ardent. Dwarf and man glared at one another while they got their breath. On the ceiling above them, worms congregated, feasting on spittle and rage.
"'Why would anyone but a troll strike down the Grag?' said Ardent.
"'Good! You're asking questions!' Vimes leaned across the desk. "'If you really want answers, unlock those doors!'
"'No! You cannot go down there, blackboard monitor Vimes!'
The dwarf could not have put more venom in the words child murderer. Vimes stared. Blackboard monitor. Well, he had been, in that little street school more than 45 years ago, Mum had insisted. Gods knew where she sprung the penny a day it cost, although most of the time Dame Slightly had been happy to accept payment in old clothes and firewood, or preferably gin. Numbers, letters, weights, measures. It was not what you'd call a rich curriculum. Vimes had attended for 9 months or so, till the streets demanded he learn much harder and sharper lessons. But, for a while, he'd been trusted to hand out the slates and clean the blackboard. Oh, the heady, strutting power of it, when you're 6 years old!
"'Do you deny it?' said Ardent. "'You destroy written words. You admitted as much to the Lu King in Uberwald.'
"'It was a joke,' said Vimes.
"'Oh, then you do deny it.
What?'
"'No.
He was impressed by my titles, and I just threw that one in for fun.'
"'Then you deny the crime,' Ardent persisted.
"'Crime? I cleaned the blackboard so that new things could be written on it. How is that a crime?'
"'You did not care where those words went,' said Ardent.
"'Care? They were just chalk dust.' Ardent sighed and rubbed his eyes.
"'Busy night,' said Vimes. "'Commander, I understand that you were young and may not have realized what you were doing, but you must understand that to us you appear to be proud of being complicit in the most heinous of crimes, the destruction of words.
Sorry. Rubbing out A is for apple is a capital crime?
One that would be unthinkable for a true dwarf, said Ardent.
Really?
But I have the trust of the Low King himself, said Vimes.
"'So I understand. There are 6 venerable Grags below us, Commander, and in their eyes the Low King and his kind have strayed from the true seam.
He is,' Ardent rattled off a sentence in staccato dwarfish too fast for Vimes to catch it, and then translated, "'wishy-washy, dangerously liberal, shallow. He has seen the light.'
Ardent was watching him carefully. Think hard. From what Vimes could remember, the Low King and his circle had been pretty crusty types. These people think they're soppy liberals.
Wishy-washy, he said.
Indeed. I invite you, therefore, to derive from that statement something of the nature of those I serve below.
Ah, thought Vimes. There's something there. Just a hint. Friend Ardent is a thinker.
When you say he has seen the light, you sound as if you mean corrupted, he said.
"'Something like that, yes. Different worlds, Commander. Down here it would be unwise to trust your metaphors. To see the light is to be blinded. Do you not know that in darkness the eyes open wider?
"'Take me to see these people down below,' said Vimes.
"'They will not listen to you. They will not even look at you. They have nothing to do with the world above. They believe it is a kind of bad dream.' I have not dared to tell them about your newspapers, printed every day and discarded like rubbish. The shock would kill them.
But dwarfs invented the printing engine, Vimes thought. Obviously they were the wrong kind of dwarf. I've seen Cheery throw stuff in the waste paper bin, too. It seems like nearly all dwarfs are the wrong sort, eh?
What exactly is your job, Mr. Ardent? Said Vimes.
"'I am their chief liaison with the world above. The steward, you could say.
"'I thought that was Helmclever's job.
"'Helmclever?
He orders the groceries, relays my orders, pays the miners and so on. The chores, in fact, said Ardent disdainfully. He is a novice, and his job is to do what I tell him. It is I who speak for the Grags.
You talk to bad dreams on their behalf.
You could put it that way, I suppose. They would not let a proud word-killer become a smelter. The idea would be abominable.
They glared at one another. Once again we end up in Coombe Valley, Vimes told himself. They won't.
Permission to make a suggestion, said Angua quietly.
Two heads turned. Two mouths said, well,
the smelter, the seeker of the truth. Must they be a dwarf?
Of course, said Ardent.
Then what about Captain Carrot? He's a dwarf.
We know of him. He is an anomaly, said Ardent. His claim to dwarfishness is debatable.
But most dwarfs in the city accept that he's a dwarf, said Angua. And he's a copper, too.
Ardent flopped back into his seat. To your dwarfs here, yes, he is a dwarf. He would be unacceptable to the Grags. There's no dwarf law that says a dwarf can't be more than 6 feet tall, sir.
The Grags are the law, woman, Ardent snapped. They interpret laws that go back for tens of thousands of years.
Well, ours don't, said Vimes. But murder is murder anywhere. The news has got out. You've already got the dwarfs and the trolls simmering nicely, and this will bring it all right to the boil. And you want a war?
With the trolls? That is,
no, with the city. A place inside the walls where the law doesn't run. His lordship won't accept that one.
You would not dare.
Look into my eyes, said Vimes.
There are far more dwarfs than there are watchmen, said Ardent, but the amused expression had fled.
So what you are telling me is that law is just a matter of numbers, said Vimes. I thought you dwarfs practically worshipped the idea of law.
Is numbers all it is?
I'll swear in more men, then. Trolls, too. They're citizens, just like me.
Are you sure every dwarf is on your side?
I'll raise the regiments. I'll have two. I know how things run in Clamados and Uberwald, but they don't run like that here.
One law, Mr. Ardent.
That's what we've got. If I let people slam the front door on it, I might as well shut down the watch.
Vimes walked the doorway.
That's my offer. Now I'm going back to the yard.
Wait!
Ardent sat staring at the desktop, drumming his fingers on it.
I do not have seniority here, he said.
Let me talk to your Grags. I promise to rub out no words.
No, they will not talk to you. They do not talk to humans. They are waiting below. They had word of your arrival. They are frightened. They do not trust humans.
Why?
Because you are not dwarfs, said Ardent. Because you are a sort of dream.
Vimes put his hands on the dwarf's shoulders. Then let's go downstairs where you can talk to them about nightmares, he said, and you can point out which one is me.
There was a long pause until Ardent said, Very well, this is under protest, you understand.
I'll be happy to make a note of that, said Vimes. Thank you for your cooperative attitude.
Ardent stood up and produced a ring of complex keys from his robes. Vimes tried to keep track of the journey, but it was hard. There were twists and turns in dim tunnels that all seemed alike. There was not a trace of water anywhere. How far did the tunnels go? How far down? How far out? Dwarfs mined through granite. They could probably stroll through river mud. In fact, in most places the dwarfs hadn't so much mined as cleaned houses, taking away the silt, tunnelling from one ancient dripping room to another, and somehow the water went away. There were things glittering, possibly magical, half seen in dark archways as they passed, and odd chanting. He knew dwarfish in a "the axe of my aunt is in your head" kind of way, and it didn't sound like that at all. It sounded like short words rattled out at very high speed. And with every turn he felt the anger coming back. They were being led in circles, were they? For no other reason than pique. Ardent forged ahead, leaving Vimes to blunder along behind and occasionally bump his head. His temper was bubbling. This was nothing more than a bloody runaround. The dwarfs didn't care about the law, about him, about the world up above. They undermine our city, and they don't obey our laws. There's been a damned murder. He admits it. Why am I putting up with this stupid play-acting? He was passing yet another tunnel mouth, but this one had a piece of board nailed across it. He pulled out his sword, yelled, I wonder what's down here,
smashed the board, and set off down the tunnel, with Angua following.
"Is this wise, sir?" she whispered as they plunged along.
"No, but I'm up to here with Mr. Ardent," Vimes growled. "I tell you, another twisty tunnel, and I'll be back here with the heavy mob, politics or not."
"Calm down, sir."
"Well, everything he says and does is an insult. It makes my blood boil," said Vimes, striding onwards and ignoring the shouts of Ardent behind him.
"There's a door ahead, sir."
"All right, I'm not blind, just half-blind," Vimes snapped. He reached out. The big round door had a wheel in its centre, and dwarf runes chalked all over it. "Can you read them, Sergeant?"
"Mortal danger, flooding, no entry," said Angua.
"More or less, sir. They're pressure doors. I've seen these used before in other mines."
"Chained shut, too," said Vimes, reaching out. "Looks like solid iron. Ow!"
"Sir?"
"Gash my hand on a nail."
Vimes rammed his hand into a pocket, where without fail Sybil saw to it that a clean handkerchief was lodged on a daily basis.
"A nail and an iron door, sir," said Angua, looking closely.
"A rivet, then. Can't see a thing in this gloom. Why, they—"
"You must follow me. This is a mine. There are dangers," said Ardent, catching up with them.
"You still get flooding?" said Vimes.
"It is to be expected. We know how to cope. Now, stay close to me."
"I'd be more inclined to do that, sir, if I thought we were taking a direct route," said Vimes. "Otherwise, I might start looking for shortcuts."
"We are nearly there, Commander," said Ardent, walking away. "Nearly there!"
Aimless and hopeless, the troll wandered. His name was Brick, although currently he couldn't remember this. His head ached. It really ached. It was to scrape it, did it? What did they always say? When you sink into where you was cooking up scrape, you was so low even the cockroaches had to bend down to spitting on you. Last night? What was happening? What bits did he see? What bits did he do? What bits in the thumping, scalding cauldron of his brain were real? The bit with the giant woolly elephants? They probably weren't real. He was pretty sure there weren't any giant woolly elephants in this city, because if there were, he would have seen them before, and there'd be big steaming turds in the streets and similar. You wouldn't miss them. He was called Brick because he'd been born in the city, and trolls, being made of metamorphorical rock, often take on the nature of the local rocks. His hide was a dirty orange, with a network of horizontal and vertical lines. If Brick stood up close to a wall, he was quite hard to see. But most people didn't see Brick anyway. He was the kind of person whose mere existence is an
"That mine with them dwarfs, was that real? You go and find a place to lie down and watch the pretty pictures, suddenly you're in this dwarf hole. That couldn't have been real. Only, word on the street was that some troll had got into a dwarf hole, yeah, and everyone was looking for that troll, and not to shake him by the hand. The word said the Breccia wanted to find out real hard, and by the sound of it, they were not happy. Not happy that some dwarf who'd been put into bad word on the clans was offed by a troll. Were they mad? Actually, it didn't matter if they was mad or not, because they had ways of asking questions that didn't heal for months, so he better keeping out their way. On the other end, a dwarf wouldn't know one troll for another, right? And no one else had seen him, so act normal, right? He'd be fine. Anyway, it couldn't have been him. It occurred to Brick, yeah, that's my name, knew it all the time, that he still had a bit of the white powder at the bottom of the bag. All he needed to do now was find a startled pigeon, some alcohol, any alcohol at all, and he'd be fine. Yeah, fine. Nothing to worry about. Yeah. When Vimes stepped out into the brilliant daylight, the first thing he did was draw a deep breath. The second thing he did was draw his sword, wincing as his sore hand protested. Fresh air, that was the stuff. He'd felt quite dizzy underground, and the tiny cut on his hand itched like mad. He'd better get Igor to take a look at it. You could probably catch anything in the muck down there. Ah, that was better. He could feel himself cooling down. The air down there had made him feel really strange. The crowd was a lot more like a mob now, but he saw at the second glance that it was what he thought of as a plum-cake mob. It doesn't take many people to turn a worried, anxious crowd into a mob. A shout here, a shove there, something thrown here, and with care every hesitant, nervous individual is being drawn into a majority that does not in fact exist. Detritus was still standing like a statue, apparently oblivious to the growing din. But Ringfounder... Damn! He
He was arguing hotly with people at the front of the crowd. You never argued. You never get drawn in.
"Corporal Ringfounder," he bellowed. "To me!"
The dwarf turned as a half-brick sailed over the heads of the mob and clanged off his helmet. He went over like a tree. Detritus moved so fast that he was halfway through the crowd before the dwarf hit the cobbles. His arm dipped into the press of bodies and hauled up a struggling figure. He spun round, thudded back through the gap that hadn't had time to close yet, and was beside Vimes before Ringfounder's helmet had stopped rolling.
"Well done, Sergeant," said Vimes out of the corner of his mouth. "Did you have a plan for the next bit?"
"I'm more the tactical kind, sir," said Detritus.
"Oh, well, at times like this you didn't argue, and you didn't step back." Vimes pulled out his badge and held it up. "This dwarf is under arrest for assaulting a watch officer," he shouted. "Let us through, in the name of the law."
And to his amazement, the crowd went quiet, like a lot of children when they sense that this time teacher is really, really angry. Perhaps it was the words on the badge, he thought. You couldn't rub them out. In the silence, another half-brick dropped out of the free hand of the dwarf into Tritus' very solid custody. Years later, Vimes would shut his eyes and still be able to recall the crunch it made when it hit the ground. Angua stood up, with the unconscious Ringfounder in her arms. "He's concussed," she said. "And I suggest, sir, that you turn round just for a moment." Vimes risked a glance. Ardent, or at least a leather-shrouded dwarf that could have been him, was standing in the shadows of the doorway. He had the attention of the crowd. "We're being allowed to go," he said to Angua, nodding to the figure.
"I think the going is the thing, sir, don't you?"
"You got that right, Sergeant. Detritus, keep a grip on that little bugger. Back to the nick, all of us." The crowd parted to let them through with barely a murmur. The silence followed them all the way back to the watch house, where Otto Shriek of the Times was waiting in the street, iconograph at the ready.
"Oh, no, you don't, Otto," said Vimes, as his squad approached. "I'm standing on the public highway, Mr. Vimes," said Otto meekly. "Smile, please."
And took a picture of a troll officer holding a dwarf up in the air. "Oh, well," said Vimes to himself, "that's page one sorted out, and probably the bloody cartoon, too." One dwarf in the cells, one in the tender loving care of Igor, Vimes thought as he trudged up the stairs to his office. And it's only going to get worse. Those dwarfs were obeying Ardent, weren't they? What would they have done if the dwarf had shaken his head? He landed in his chair so hard that it rolled back a foot. He'd met deep-down dwarfs before. They'd been weird, but he'd been able to deal with them. The Low King was a deep-downer, and Vimes had got on with him well enough, once you accepted that the fairy-tale dwarf in the Hogfather beard was an astute politician. He was a dwarf with vision. He dealt with the world. Ha! He'd seen the light, but those in the new mine... He hadn't seen them, even though they were sitting in a room made brilliant with the light of hundreds of candles. That seemed odd, since the grags themselves were completely shrouded in their pointy black leather. But maybe it was some mystic ceremony, and who'd look for sense there? Maybe you got a more holy dark in the midst of light. The brighter the light, the blacker the shadow. Ardent had spoken in a language that sounded like dwarfish, and out of the dark hoods had come answers and questions, all barked out in the same harsh, brief syllables. At one point, Vimes was asked to repeat the meat of his statement made up above, which had seemed too far away now. He'd done so, and there'd been a long, drawn-out discussion in what he came to think of as deep dwarf. And all the time he felt that eyes he could not see were watching him very hard indeed. It didn't help that his head had been aching like mad, and there were shooting pains going up and down his arm. And that was it. Had they understood him? He didn't know. Ardent had said that they agreed with considerable reluctance. Had they? He hadn't a clue. Not a clue to what had really been said. Would Carrot be given access to a crime scene that had not been interfered with in any way? Vimes grunted. Ha! What do you think, boys and girls? He pinched his nose, and then stared at his right hand. Igor had gone on at length about tiny invisible biting creatures, and used some vicious ointment that probably killed anything of any size or visibility. It had stung like seven hells for 5 minutes, but then had gone and seemed to have taken the pain with it. Anyway, what mattered was that the watch was officially on this case. His eye was caught by the top sheet of paperwork in his in-tray. Vimes maintained three trays, in, out, and shake it all about. The last one was where he put everything he was too busy, angry, tired, or bewildered to do anything about. He groaned as he picked it up. "To His Grace Sir Samuel Vimes,
commander of the watch, from Mr. A. E. Pessimal, inspector of the watch, Your Grace. I hope you will not mind giving me, as soon as possible, the answers to the following questions. 1. What is Corporal Nobby Nobbs for? Why do you employ a known petty thief? 2. I timed two officers in Broadway earlier, and in the space of 1 hour they made no arrests. Why was this an economic use of their time? 3. The level of violence used by Troll officers against Troll prisoners appears excessive. Could you please comment upon this? And so on. Vimes read on with his mouth open. All right, the man wasn't a copper, definitely not, but surely he had a fully functional brain. Oh, good grief. He'd even spotted the monthly discrepancy in the petty cash box. Would A.E. Pessimal understand if Vimes explained that Nobby's services over the years more than made up for the casual petty theft which you accepted as a kind of mild nuisance? Would that be an economic use of my time? I think not. As he put the paper back in the in-tray, he spotted a sheet underneath, in Cheery's handwriting. He picked it up and read it. Two dwarfs and one troll had handed in their badges that morning, citing family reasons. Damn. That was 7 officers lost this week. Bloody Coombe Valley, it got everywhere. Oh, it couldn't be fun, heavens knew, being a troll, holding the line against a bunch of your fellow trolls, and defending a dwarf like the late Hamcrasher. It probably wasn't any funnier, being a dwarf, hearing that some troll street gang beat up your brother because of what that idiot had said. Some people would be asking, whose side are you on? If you're not for us, you're against us. If you're not an apple, you're a banana. Carrot came in quietly and placed a plate on the desk. Angua told me all about it, he said. Well done, sir. What do you mean, well done, said Vimes, looking at his healthy sandwich lunch. I nearly started a war. Ah, but they didn't know you were bluffing. I probably wasn't. Vimes carefully lifted the top of the bacon, lettuce and tomato sandwich and smiled inwardly. Good old Cheery, she knew what a Vimes BLT was all about. It was about having to lift up quite a lot of crispy bacon before you found the miserable, skulking vegetables. You might never notice them at all. I want you to take Angua down there with you again, he said. And, yes, Lance Constable Humperding. Our little Sally. Just the job for a vampire who fortuitously has arrived in the nick of time, eh? Let's see how good she is. Just those two, sir? Yes, they both have very good night vision, yes? Vimes looked down at his sandwich and mumbled, We can't take any artificial light down there. A murder investigation in the dark, sir? I had no choice, said Vimes hotly. I know a sticking point when I see one, Captain. No artificial light. Well, if they want to play silly buggers, I'm their boy. You know about mines, and both the ladies have got night vision built in. Well, the vampire has, and Angua can practically see with her nose. So that's it. Do the best you can. The place is full of those damned glow beetles. They should help. They've got worms, said Carrot. Oh, well, I know some tricks there, sir. Good. They say a big troll did it and ran away. Make of that what you will. There might be some protests about Sally, sir, said Carrot. Why? Will they spot she's a vampire? No, sir, I don't think they... Then don't tell them, said Vimes. You're the smelter. It's up to you what tools you use. Seen this? He waved the report about the 3 officers he was trying not to think of as deserters. Yes, sir. I was meaning to talk to you about that. It might help if we change the patrols a bit, said Carrot. How do you mean? It would be quite easy to arrange the patrol schedules, so the trolls and dwarfs don't have to go on the beat together, sir. Some of the lads say they'll be a bit happier if we could... Carrot let the sentence die away in the stony glare. We've never paid any attention to an officer's species when we do the roster, Captain, said Vimes coldly. Except for the gnomes, of course. There's your precedent, then, Carrot began. Don't be daft. A typical gnome room is about twice the size of a shoebox, Captain. Look, you can see this idea is nuts. Dangerous nuts, too. We'd have to patrol troll with troll, dwarf with dwarf, and human with human. Not necessarily, sir. Humans could patrol with either of the others. Vimes rocked his chair forward. No, they couldn't. This is not about common sense. This is about fear. If a troll sees a dwarf and a human patrolling together, he'll think, There's the enemy, 2 against 1. Can't you see where this is going? When a copper's in a tight corner and blows his whistle for backup, I don't want him demanding that when it arrives it's the right damn shape. He calmed down a little, opened his notebook and tossed it onto the desk. And talking of shapes, do you know what this means?
I spotted it in the mine, and a dwarf called Helmclever scrawled it in some spilt coffee. And you know what? I think he was only half aware he'd done it. Carrot picked up the notebook and regarded the sketch solemnly for a moment.
"Mine sign, sir," he said. "It means the following dark."
"And what does that mean?"
That things are pretty bad down there, sir," said Carrot earnestly.
"Oh, dear." He put the notebook down slowly, as if half afraid it might explode.
"Well, there has been a murder, Captain," Vimes pointed out.
"Yes, sir. But this might mean something worse, sir. Mine sign is a very strange phenomenon.
There was a sign like it over the door, only there was just one line and it was horizontal," Vimes added.
"Oh, that'd be the long dark rune, sir," said Carrot dismissively. "It's just a symbol for a mine, nothing to worry about."
"But this other one is? Is it anything to do with Grags sitting in a room surrounded by lighted candles?"
It was always nice to surprise Carrot, and this time he looked amazed.
"How did you work that out, sir?"
"It's only words, Captain," said Vimes, waving a hand. "The following dark doesn't sound good. Time to stay brightly lit, maybe. When I met them, they were surrounded by candles. I thought maybe it was some kind of ceremony."
"Could be," Carrot agreed carefully.
"Thank you for this, sir. I'll go prepared." As Carrot reached the door, Vimes added,
"One thing, Captain."
"Yes, sir?"
Vimes didn't look up from the sandwich, out of which he was daintily separating the L and the T from the crispy B.
"Just remember you're a copper, will you?" he said.